You've heard it every way. A dog will have his day. But when it comes to wailing, dogs ain't got a thing to say. So they can do the waiting, cause I ain't hesitating. The future's round the corner, so for now I'm gonna play. Now's the time to wail. Not later, but right now's the time.
That's Elvira Vi Red on alto sax, leading off on Now's the Time from her 1962 album, Bird Call. Vi Red, the daughter of jazz drummer Alton Red, was a rare breed in jazz at the time that she emerged in the early 1950s with her signature bebop, hard bop, and post-bop styles. She performed with many great jazz artists, including Earl Hines, Max Roach, Count Basie, Rahsaan Roland Kirk, and Marion McPartland. And she was heavily influenced by Charlie Parker. Her Bird Call album is dedicated to him. Also featuring on this album, aside folks, Carmel Jones on trumpet, Roy Ayers, a young Roy Ayers on vibes, Russ Freeman on piano, Leroy Vinegar on bass, and Richie Goldberg, this is Vi's husband, on drums. This is Lead Stories. I kind of got my name mixed up there for a minute. Lead Stories, I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, June the 19th. We start off by noting that we are close. Hopefully, by next Friday, we would return to our regularly scheduled free-for-all session on Free Your Mind Fridays. But we are getting very close with the testing and retesting of the wires and the innards of PRN's brand new studios. It's a great move, and we are so grateful for your patience and your support during this time when we're not able to get your calls in as we normally did. But that's going to be solved very, very shortly. So I want to return to our discussion. You know, it's an amazing thing. It might have been just fortuitous or it might have been intuitive. But the discussion that I began last week on getting real about where we are and understanding that systems rule us, systems govern every aspect of our lives, and we are plugged into systems. The question is whether we are aware of it or not, what kinds of systems we are plugged into, whether we understand our relationship to these systems, and whether we understand the function and operation of systems and what they are meant to do with respect to our collective and even individual needs. But systems regulate all of our lives, all the time. We are never outside of a system. No, you are part of a system. Whether you acknowledge it or not, we all are parts of systems. And the whole thing was to bring us to the idea of what rules this country? All of us. And we've been seeing these stories popping up, and we think, of course, that they are separate and discrete stories standing alone, and that they're not related. And I keep talking about the fact that if you understand systems, you see how related they are. We talked about the Rachel Dolezal, oh Lord, what am I doing with names today? And the idea that we should entertain here is that these things are not at all unlinked. They're very much linked. They don't look like they're linked. They look like they're operating in their own little world. But when we understand systems, we see that the Rachel Dolezal story, the story of this young white woman who has assigned herself an identity that is causing great turmoil because the identity she has chosen is an African-American identity. There are all kinds of interesting questions that come out of that. And I talked about that yesterday and the day before. But in the end, it is still part of the system because the system sets up the standard. Why? Because it has the power to do so. And because it has the power to do so, to basically exercise comprehensive and total control of this thing called the society, they know they can't run a country just by themselves. But they aim to govern and control the country by themselves. And so people have to be made to understand their role within the system. And their role within the system is also dictated by this power elite. They set up the standard. They set up the standard for all kinds of things. The standard for beauty, the standard for how you live, your quality of life, what you are, quote, entitled to, what you will get, how much, where you will live, where your children will go to school, whether you get a job, whether you hold and keep that job. All these things, it may sound a little bit paranoid, but in fact, all over the world, there are systems that govern all these things. Some systems are far more insightful than others, far more democratic than others, far more advanced than others, because they see that if the society is to progress, if the society is to actually go from one stage to the other in orderly fashion, it would help to share the wealth, if you will. There's no country, I don't think, a country. There may be groups of people, but there's no country that I could think of where there is a utopian view of complete democracy. Everybody has equal access to the strategic resources of that society, and the wealth is shared. No. Here in the United States, we always have to remember that from the very beginning, the intention was to set up a system that reflected their primordial needs. These were people who were the flotsam and jetsam of Europe, the refuse, the cast-offs, the people who did not see it possible to deal with a system of power there that even recognized their humanity. And yet, even before they stepped aboard the ships that brought them here, they knew that they would definitely control whoever and whatever they met here. It was going to be theirs and theirs alone. And then they will take it the further step of being theirs completely forever. Forever. All of the strategic resources. I've said time and again how we really are to measure this thing called democracy. Forget the words, and we would be talking a lot about word games today, the word games that are being played, because a huge part of all of this is to get the vast majority of the people being controlled to behave, to accept their domination, to accept the fact that they are to be unequal, and they ought to like it. They shouldn't raise too much of a hackle about it, because that would upset systems. The system is organized to be effective at compelling compliance. And they have all kinds of means available to them to do it, which is why the system has remained remarkably consistent all these hundreds of years, quite consistent. And the power equation has remained relatively intact. The people who have power, they know they have power, and there are people who don't. And they know they don't. Some don't. Some really still are in this la-la land. They think they have power. Why? Because they vote. And I keep saying, voting has nothing to do with power. You can understand your power when you can measure the degree to which you have reasonable access and certain access to the strategic resources that are linked to your survival. Now that's democracy. Everything else is a joke. It's playing games with your mind. In the recent days, since Wednesday, when this tragedy occurred in South Carolina, this young 21-year-old with a gun goes into a church and kills 9 people, wounds some others, and is unapologetic about his action. The reaction on the other side remains remarkably consistent, and that is part of the system. People suffering this kind of outrage would tend to basically be on the flip side of the violence directed at them. But it is predictable, and we see how predictable the action is. I'm not condemning it by any means. I'm saying this is what it is. This is the conditioning. We absorb the pain and we forgive those who harm us. And we basically look to the divine, to the Lord, to fix things. When logic tells you, well, it's a good way, it's a very strong spiritual expression, but it also does not alter the power equation here. There's something kind of amiss. And in all of this grief, and it is justifiable grief, believe me, I'm not condemning it at all, and nor am I criticizing it. I'm saying just let us understand what it is we're witnessing. The power isn't there to change anything. The power isn't there to change future outcomes similar to what was experienced on Wednesday. It just isn't there. And we have to acknowledge that. That is a direct piece of evidence about the effectiveness of a system. I draw your attention to the fact that this is no ordinary church. This church was founded in part by Denmark Vesey, a slave, an enslaved man. I don't want to use the word slave like it's a profession. He was enslaved by a system designed to assure that he would have no chance, and nobody connected with him for generations would have a chance simply to live a human life with the expectation that within your means you can live a fruitful and productive life, free from fear and everything else that goes with that. This church was founded by Denmark Vesey, who had at one point a very spiritual, deeply spiritual man, said, listen, we have reached a tipping point here with regard to this terrorism aimed at subjugating us, at annihilating us, at killing us off. And we have to defend ourselves. Well, you know what happened. Denmark Vesey, in fact, did advocate armed resistance, and he was executed. The system said, you will never be as powerful as we are. And we have our system in place. The formula is in place. In the United States, we will use this thing, this false construct of race, and therefore we can build it, build around the psychology of oppression to make you feel comfortable with your oppression. That's the whole thing. We have the means to compel you to comply. You cannot resist because we have the means to obliterate you and as many after you as we so desire. We have all kinds of ways of doing that. It is significant that this attack took place in a church, and this particular church, the oldest and largest congregation of the African Methodist Episcopal denomination in the South. The attacker, you know, I hate to even say his name, Dylan Storm Roof, 21 years old, obviously quite limited in, in his mental capacity. Let me get a drink of water here for a minute. Has no knowledge, no reference point, but knows something very important, and that is the importance and the symbolism of the church in the South, of the Black church, period. Because it was in the Black church within the spiritual context that the Black communities all across this nation found the energy to resist. In some cases, they were placated because their leaders were part of the system, agents of the system. And we see that more and more in recent years, in recent decades. But this church, Denmark Vesey's church, and the churches formed at that time grew out of the crucible of resistance to oppression, spiritually grounded, that God did not make you to be inferior to anyone, that God did not give the power to anybody to dominate and annihilate in the way that they had been experiencing, that you have the right and the duty to safeguard the future for those coming behind you. And you were just as equal, if not in the eyes of the law, quote unquote, but certainly in the eyes of God. And this was a huge boost. This was what kept people going. But it had a flip side to it. It removed some from the immediacy of resistance and looking instead to the delayed gratification after death. That is, after spending the anticipation that they would spend their lives in servitude, they came to terms with that psychologically because the awesomeness of the system was so complete. They saw no way of prevailing. So the church is a very symbolic place of attack. And in this regard, Dylan Storm Roof was continuing the extremism, the program to annihilate, set down by people long before him. History is replete with examples of how domestic terrorism, white supremacist domestic terrorism, essentially targeted churches for hundreds of years, and the spirituality of African Americans, Native Americans, people who were targeted for subjugation. They attacked the very places where they found the opportunity, perhaps sometimes the only opportunity, to realize in their minds some degree of value, self-worth. They attacked them there. In recent years, as we know, in the 60s, which is viewed and still is viewed, certainly was viewed at that time, as a resistance movement. It was quite mild, really, speaking generally. It was a mild resistance movement. But it signaled to the world a consciousness, a collective consciousness, not only by blacks, but by all decent people. People who said, this is not the society we desire to be part of. This is not the society we desire to be in. And we are not going to permit this society to descend to these levels. So we are resisting. That was one side of the coin. On the other side of the coin, we saw the resistance by the system. What did it do? Assassinations, mass jailings, all kinds of laws that restricted people's human rights, and it basically trounced human rights. Because the entire world was witnessing the truth of America. This is the American system. You know, every country has a system of governing or governance. This race oppression, this crazy psychotic mentality, the formula, the scientific formula of racism, I describe it as an applied science. And I read you something from the Live Science report about professors and all these experts arguing about the science of racism. There's no science to racism. It's all made up. And it's made up because this was perhaps the most effective way that the people at the time saw to basically control the society. You make up all kinds of rules because you have the power to make up rules. And then you have the Supreme Court endorsing your crazy rules. And then you have the police forces all across the nation enforcing your crazy rules. That doesn't mean that they're sane. It doesn't mean that they're just or right or even logical. But you have the wherewithal to force these things to happen. And the world was seeing that America was an inveterate kind of country, absolutely unwilling to undo its system. I want to share with you a story that was printed today, that appeared today, on the way the world is reacting to the massacre in Charleston, South Carolina on Wednesday. This is a piece by Christopher Bodine in the Associated Press, and the headline is "World Shocked at Enduring Racism and Gun Violence in the United States." Enduring racism and gun violence in the United States. The world is shocked. The United States really isn't shocked, because we've seen these things happen time and again. And certainly in those communities that very often over hundreds of years have been targeted, this is not a shocking thing. What is shocking is that the resolute nature of the system to absolutely not do a damn thing about it, to not change it, and our society to not insist that it be changed. Because this sickness, this psychotic set of laws and this psychotic formula that has been enacted for hundreds of years in this country, even opponents to it, people who, if you get into conversations with them, they will tell you how personally they're offended by these things. They're offended by race oppression in this country. But on the other hand, if they happen by sheer skin color, just that alone, to be a beneficiary of some goodies, they can live with it. They can live with these things, because the sickness of this formula is like the oil business. Even when it's bad, it's good. You know, for many in the liberal world and many in the progressive world, personally, I frown on these things. I despise these things. However, if it gives me a job, if I have the upper hand on a job simply because I am a white guy or a white woman walking in the door over somebody else who's qualified, quote unquote, I'll take it. I can still try to persuade myself about how progressive I am, but if I can get the goodies with my skin as a passport, I can rationalize that. I'm not as bad as the others, but I could rationalize the fact that, you know, it's not my doing. It's just how the system works. But of course, we know this is also a form of lying. You're denying a reality that you know. So why is this country so absolutely obstinate about this question of moving somewhere in a direction that indicates that there's some degree of confluence between what you say and what you know, your philosophy of this great democracy, this great nation, and yet this is how it expresses itself? And this is perhaps more extreme way of expressing it, but this is the violence done every single day. Violence is done because that is how the system is organized. I read today that the president of Comcast has died at the age of 93. And it was very sad news in the telecommunications and the mass communications world. But there was a story there. And it picks up from where it is I talked about when I was referring to Rachel Dolezal and the system reacting so violently against the fact that she opted out of her whiteness, and I'm speaking about that in its political sense, it's her whiteness, and traded it in and defected to the other side. And so the concern was, why would a person do that? That is not the way it's supposed to go. Because the system defines everything. There's a white standard. We all live according to this atrocious, psychotic white standard. Who sets it up? I don't know. But I do know that it has been effective. And I do know that it has been set up. Why? Because the laws reflect that. And people make the laws. And people enforce the laws. And all of that goes together. This is not something that just is incidental. This is quite deliberate. And yes, you could describe it as a conspiracy. This is an ongoing conspiracy to maintain the dominance of one group over all others. And the most effective method has been, from a scientific point of view, this business of using race, this false construct of race, to now serve as the philosophical and the psychological undergirding for how we all behave. We all behave in a really strange way because we all have, in one way or the other, adjusted ourselves, our thinking, our being, our doing. It's all governed by this all-encompassing psychological conditioning that we have been forced to live with. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. And yet, this is the spoken and unspoken way in which we live. This young man, nobody had to tell him, probably, go to a black church. But if you were living in an environment and you're getting out of the environment that this is the way, you know, you have a history, a documented history in South Carolina, in North Carolina, in Georgia, every place else. You have a history of seeing this thing happen. You target the churches because you really aim to get people riled up. You want to force them into confrontation, the great racial Armageddon. You see yourself as the agent of doom. As an ignorant 21-year-old, you could accomplish that, but you're operating on what you see. You're operating on your conditioning. And on the flip side, everybody goes and hugs each other and they comfort each other and they pray to the Lord for the ones who have been killed so violently. And they asked the government, could you please, please do something? And yes, we will come out and vote. And we more than likely would vote Democratic. You see, it doesn't make sense. And yet we refuse to acknowledge this is our reality. How long must we continue down this path? And think that there is going to be a point in which change will come. If we love our enemies hard enough, sacrificially enough, they will change and treat us right. They will do the right thing. They will see the light. They will, you know, they will come to terms with us. And they will understand that, you know, we need each other, all that other kind. It's not going to happen. That is not going to happen. Even if people think that way, the system is already entrenched and it will see to it that it won't happen. They'll get you fighting over, like in California, they're fighting over water now because the law is making up its own thing about who gets water and who doesn't get water. And who gets good schools and who doesn't get good schools. And who gets jobs and who doesn't get jobs. The system is doing its thing. It's remaining remarkably true and consistent with its initial intention. It is the rest of the people who are caught up and wrapped up in this denial. So I've been saying the time has come to be real about where we are. About everything, all these systems that control our lives. It has long since gone. Really, we way late on this piece of business, and we need to confront it in our own worlds where we have our own systems, and in the larger sense where this overarching system controls all of us. We all are demented in that sense because we accept their psychotic behavior, their psychotic philosophy, their psychotic actions. These things have been established as the norm. And we are forced to regard these things as the norm. But if we do not put up a fight, then we deserve exactly what we get. If we have no alternative systems that basically give us a way out, that opens a trap door out of this crazy psychotic world in which they're perfectly at ease because they're nuts. When you have a country that is operating like this, people from the outside are going, is that real? Is this how people behave in the great superpower called the United States? And it's been going on for hundreds of years, and yet every time it happens, people talk about, well, it's an isolated incident. Oh, well, you know, he was mentally ill. Oh, well, this is a hate crime. No, it's not a hate crime. This is the actual modern-day expression of the terrorism that has been part of the American experience for hundreds of years. American terrorism. This is it. This is what it looks like. And as I discussed, the insistence is to play games with our heads and say, well, you know, it's a hate crime with a little extra on it, but it doesn't rise. They will not use the word terrorism because that is just not going to be in the interest of this system. So we could go as far as to say, well, it was an act of hatred. No, this is not hatred. Or if you choose to recognize it as hatred, you go right ahead. But people would be crazy to go along with that. A particular community must understand, the community targeted must understand, this is terrorism. This is what it is. This is an act that is well within the historic attacks against people of color in this country. And the specific aim is exactly what he said, to wipe people out, just kill them off. Now, if you want to call that a hate crime, you go right ahead and call it a hate crime. But pardon me while I disagree and connect with the reality of history that says this is a continuum of the annihilation program begun hundreds of years ago. That's my reality, and that's my point of reference. Whiteness, white supremacy is the order of the day in the United States. You want to debate that? You go right ahead. You will be having a monologue because I'm not going to join in a conversation so patently stupid. It is so clear. Hundreds of years, lots of evidence, lots of documentation. Any reasonable person would understand exactly what it is you're looking at. If you want to fall for these games, these word games and mind games, you go right ahead. But we should, by this point, there ought to be some realization that the situation only cosmetically has changed. Systemically, it remains intact and in very good shape. It is accomplishing the mission. The question I've been asking and raising and insisting that we deal with is, what is the counter system going to be? Especially if you understand, and these things are meant to make you understand, to compel us all to understand, that it is linked literally to your survival and our collective survival. What systems do you have in place to counter what you see is happening? And, you know, the insistence on telling us that we really don't see what we're seeing. We really are not witnessing what we're witnessing. We really don't know what we know. I look right there in South Carolina. What is the system of response going to be? Who is stepping forward and creating that system, which Denmark Vesey in the 1800s, early 1800s, and others all across the nation who considered themselves members of a targeted class, they devised systems. What is our system today? Well, you look and you see our system is that we have leaders leading everybody down the path toward the system that aims to annihilate them. They're part and parcel of it. Are we separating ourselves from them, or more importantly, are we separating them from us? Are we constructing things that literally help us survive? Help us lay the path for those coming behind, as forebears did. Everybody's forebears did a job, a good job. It may not have been perfect. It may not have been an easy accomplishment, but they did it. Every single day, they increased their yardage toward the goal so that those coming behind would have an easier time of it. It was not about them. It was about those coming behind. And that's what survival is. I referred earlier in the conversation today about the president of Comcast dying. Richard Roberts was his name. Dies at the age of 95. And there's a story, an instruction here, which I had talked about earlier. His name is, Ralph Roberts, not Richard, Ralph Roberts, did a phenomenal job of building a little company into a multi-billion dollar entity. In fact, frankly, I have no great words to speak of when it comes to Comcast, because they are the behemoth in the state of Florida. You either deal with Comcast or you don't deal with anybody. I mean, they have a monopoly in Florida. But his name is Ralph Roberts. Why is that significant? It's significant because Ralph Roberts was Jewish. I don't know what his family name was, but I would say that Roberts is not a Jewish or typically Jewish name. So I strongly suspect that somewhere the forebears of Ralph Roberts understood that prosperity in America, achievement in America, required you to understand the system. And if the system here is racism, racism of all types, including antisemitism, you have to outwit that system. And I strongly suspect that somewhere along the line, they decided a key method of survival is to anglicize. Remove any outward indication of your ethnicity or your ethnic identity and go with the one thing you've got in this racist society. You've got white skin. You can blend in. You can change your name. You still know that you're Jewish, but you're changing the name because you know they hate Jews. You're not welcome within the halls of power. You can't go to Harvard and Wharton and these Ivy League schools with a Jewish name at a time when there was virulent anti-Semitism in this country. You can't do that and be successful. Certainly, millions of Jews couldn't do it. You had one here, one there, who they let through the sluice. Just like African Americans, you have one millionaire here and one, they let them through the sluice. But certainly, you can't say that they are symptomatic of the whole class. So as I read this notice today of Ralph Roberts' death and how he built this company from a small cable system in Tupelo, Mississippi, to a behemoth, it could not have happened if he had played the game. He had to have made some kind of amendment and construct a system that would work for him in order for him to achieve his ultimate goal. And key to that was his identity. This is what I mean when I said yesterday, we hearing about all the brouhaha about a white woman who chose to assign herself a black identity. We never hear about whites who assign themselves a white identity in the sense that we're talking, the political sense of whiteness. When Ralph Roberts's forebears came to the country, probably from Eastern Europe, and they understood how this thing works, how it operates, that racism, racial supremacy, white supremacy was the order of the day. How do you navigate around that? Because the standard for everything was determined in the crucible of white supremacy. Standard of success has to do with how white supremacists saw success. Standard of beauty is how whites saw beauty. Standard of education, that's, so you are constantly being measured against that axis. You are on the double helix of life. You have your life that you know, that you want, that you cherish, and that you respect, and you have that double helix on the other side, which is almost an exact opposite of what it is you want. But that's their system. And you have to decide, are you going with their system or are you going with your system? And this is an example. His white skin, he understood, with everything going against him, he could easily change his name. The family could easily change their names, I should say, and blend in. Because at that time, I'm sure, they came in at a time when America was not the best place for Jews to be. Wall Street would never admit groups of Jews in Wall Street to control the economy. That was the bastion of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males. Jews only very recently were admitted to Wall Street. So they had a particular challenge before them. But they, understanding this business of white supremacy, many of them did what the Roberts family did. They became innocuous, visibly invisible. in order for them to achieve what they desired, which was the same thing. The standard of prosperity is a lot of money, tons of money, and he succeeded. Now, many groups can't do that. And if you understand that, say, well, okay, you know, as long as you understand that whiteness, white supremacy, is the number one priority in this country, we can let you in. And so, as time went by, many people who previously could not get in, even with white skin, because they did not subscribe, they couldn't be trusted to subscribe to this notion of whiteness in its political sense. Many had come from countries where an entirely different role of government, from the Soviet Union or from countries controlled by the Soviet Union, communist countries, socialist countries. You look at Hollywood and you see what many people had to do in order to make it, quote unquote, many big stars. But it was their counter system, understanding first the system that they were countering. This is what we have to engage in. We have to get these discussions started. If we intend to have a future, we should at least develop an idea of what our reality is. If we don't have a sense of where we are, we have no idea how to get where we want to go or even where we want to go. We have delayed these discussions for a long time. We have denied these realities for a long time. But it doesn't stop these things from occurring. It doesn't stop the reality that we are living with and living in. And I'm just pleading for us to get a hold of this. This is the big piece of work. I've been asking, when are we going to start this conversation? Who is going to be in that conversation? What is the system that we will devise to deal with where we are? Everybody has, in one way or the other, has had to adjust to this crazy psychotic system. When are we going to extricate ourselves from it, or extricate it from ourselves? When are we going to, as groups of people with unique interests, when are we going to articulate our own systems, define our own ways of operating, embrace new ways of thinking and acting, so that we can arrive at some degree of parity, not with what the system says, but with what our forebears said? They had a more humane approach. They had a far superior intelligence. They had greater wishes. They had a better attitude, even, in how they dealt with each other. So how do we get there? That is the continuing question. We'll continue this next week. And especially, I would like us to trade our thoughts on this, because this is really where the breaking point or the tipping point is, I think. We've arrived at it finally. If we can put the stake, drive a stake into the heart of this beast and begin the process of designing a new day. Not because it would please anybody, but because it is vital, it is necessary to continued survival. Thank you for allowing me to share my thoughts with you today. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to our phones again reconnecting us so that we can trade ideas. In the meantime, don't let people play with your minds. Your mind is the most important piece of real estate that you will ever own. And you really need to exercise total sovereignty over it. It is a pleasure always and a great, great privilege to be in your company. Stay tuned. Coming up next, what's coming up next? Let's see. We have the Lifeboat Hour with Carolyn Baker. You want to stay tuned for that? You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. And I really appreciate hearing from you. It gives me a good idea of how these programs are resonating with you. Have yourselves a great weekend. Connect with people who matter to you in your life. And we'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.